ID, the future. A podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Hello, I'm Tom Gilson. Today we are pleased to bring you a conversation between radio host, author, and Discovery Institute senior fellow Michael Medved and the Discovery Institute's own Stephen C. Meyer, speaking on Dr. Meyer's newest release, The Return of the God Hypothesis. Our thanks go to Mr. Medved for permission to repost their radio show conversation here.
What you're saying in your new book, The Return of the God Hypothesis, and again, people can find out about it very directly at discovery.org/Medved. One of the things you're saying in your book is that the more science has advanced, particularly in the last 50 years, say, the more the God hypothesis has necessarily returned. Explain.
Well, right. The title implies a kind of a story in that science arose during a period in Western civilization, science in its modern form, roughly between 1500 and 1700. Many historians date its origin a bit earlier, back to the late medieval period. But it arose in a religious milieu. It was Christian Western Europe. But many of the Christian founders of modern science were also very interested in concepts coming out of the Hebrew Bible. The notion of the laws of nature was something they actually got from the book of Job and some of the prophetic writings. There was also a very key religious idea, which was that nature was and is intelligible. It could be understood. It had secrets to reveal, and it could be understood because human beings were made in the image of the rational creator who made and put the reason and the rationality into nature. So there was a principle of correspondence. Nature has order and design and is intelligible because it was made by an intelligent creator who also made our minds with the same kind of reason that he built into nature so we could perceive it and understand it. And so there was this original religious inspiration for science. Almost all historians of science now see that and write about it. But then in the 19th century, with figures like Darwin, Marx, and Freud, there was a kind of materialistic interpretation of modern science that arose. And so the worldview framework for doing science shifted. And that has persisted into the 20th and even into our time among many spokesmen for science. But starting in about the 1920s and then all through the last 100 years, there have been very significant discoveries that have challenged that dominant materialistic narrative. And the three that I focus on in the book.
The one discovery that you start out with talking about in that regard is what is called the Big Bang Theory, which basically suggests that there was a beginning to the cosmos. It hasn't always been here. It's not a steady state. It's a Big Bang. It has a beginning. Why is that lead back to the God hypothesis?
Well, that's exactly right, Michael. It was a huge and very unexpected discovery. Every worldview or philosophy has to answer a fundamental question of origins. What is the thing or the entity or the process from which everything else came? And by the end of the 19th century, it was assumed that everything had come from some simpler form of matter and energy, which itself was eternal and self-existent. It had always been here. And materialists viewed matter and energy in much the same way that theists viewed God, as that entity from which everything else came. And so the materialistic worldview was deeply wedded to the idea that matter and energy and the physical universe itself was eternal, self-existent, and self-creating. And so beginning in the 1920s, when first the observational astronomers and then later the theoretical physicists began to have various indications that the universe had a definite beginning. And this really shook people. Einstein himself was initially very opposed to the idea of the Big Bang and had proposed a kind of steady state model. And he got there by tweaking his own equations. He kind of fiddled with them to get the philosophical implication that he wanted. And then as the evidence for first an expanding universe and then some other evidences came in, he eventually changed his view and said that his fiddling with his own equations was the biggest mistake of his scientific career. But what was at stake for him was precisely this big philosophical issue of whether the universe was eternal and self-existent or whether it had a beginning. And if it had a beginning, therefore the obvious implication was that something beyond it must have caused it, and that something beyond it has often been associated with the concept of God.
The book is The Return of the God Hypothesis. When we come back, a few minutes more with Steve Meyer, because he talks about the second scientific discovery being fine-tuning. Yeah, fine-tuning of what? Of the universe, and particularly of our life here on Earth, to adopt to the idea of life. What is that about? And will the United Arab Emirates exploration of planet Mars and the Chinese explanation of planet Mars reveal likely life on that red planet? The book, The Return of the God Hypothesis, speaking with Dr. Steve Meyer. More coming up. I'm back with Steve Meyer. He is the author, most recently, of The Return of the God Hypothesis. He previously wrote the triumphant bestseller, Signature of the Cell, Signature in the Cell, and Darwin's Doubt. This new book goes beyond either of those, and it actually suggests, okay, if you want to argue that there is a mind in the universe, that there is some scheme that has arisen here that isn't just accidental and random, well, what does that indicate of the nature of that force or the nature of that mind? And again, you can find out more about this book by going to discovery.org/Medved. And, Steve, I wanted to ask you, first of all, in terms of the second great discovery, and it's very exciting to read about it and to read about how people understood these aspects of the universe. You talk about fine-tuning. Now, if there's fine-tuning, there clearly is somebody who's doing the tuning. How could there be fine-tuning of reality itself to enable life and the advancement of biological development of life?
Well, this is one of the really great discoveries of modern physics. It started in the 1950s and 60s. There was a particular physicist named Fred Hoyle from Cambridge University who was fascinated by the abundance of carbon in the universe, realizing that carbon was an absolutely essential element for building any kind of life. It's it forms long chain like molecules that allow it to store information, and we need information to build living things. And so as he began to study how carbon might have formed, he realized that there were a whole series of parameters that had to be beautifully finely tuned, not too strong, not too weak, not too fast, not too slow. And in fact, physicists now talk about the universe as a kind of a Goldilocks universe, where multiple forces and parameters and the masses of the elementary particles and the expansion rate of the universe. We learned about the beginning of the universe because the universe is expanding outward in all directions. Turns out that expansion rate is derivative of a force called the cosmological constant that has to be fine-tuned to about one part in 10 to the 90th power. It's an exquisite degree of fine-tuning, or if engineers are listening, they'll be aware of the concept of tolerances, that they're very fine tolerances that allow the universe to host life. And Hoyle, who had been a very staunch atheist and opposed the Big Bang theory on the grounds that on philosophical grounds, he didn't like it because he thought it implied a creator, ended up changing his own worldview in response to discoveries that he had made in physics about all of these different exquisitely finely tuned parameters that had to be just right. And he's famously quoted as saying, "A common sense interpretation of the evidence from physics and chemistry suggests that a super intellect has monkeyed with nature to make life possible." And it's amusing because I always think it's fun how the monkeys make it into the origins discussion, even if it's physics. But, you know, another of these scientists, like Einstein, who dramatically changed his perspective and his worldview in response to a scientific discovery, in this case not about the origin of the universe itself, but about the origin of its physical structure and the way it was set up to allow for the possibility of life.
And part of what you talk about, and this is the whole theme of Signature in the Cell, your previous best-selling book, is that really the whole idea of DNA is the way that all this information, and it's really a great deal of information, it's code that is passed on from place to place. The third scientific discovery that you talk about and refer to in the title is the discovery that there is new information being implanted into the cosmos on a regular basis. It's not like it all started way back at the beginning of the Big Bang. There seems to be generation of new information. How do we know?
Bursts or infusions, yeah, into our specifically into planet Earth, into our biosphere. We're very sensitive to this in our Microsoft culture here in the Seattle area. But we know that if you want to build a new computer program or give your computer a new function or operating system, you have to provide code. The great discovery of modern molecular biology is that the same thing is true of life. If you want to build life in the first place, or if you want to build a new form of life, the evolutionary process or something would have had to provide new information to build the proteins and the protein machines that keep living cells and living systems alive. And we know all about now, thanks to Watson and Crick, we know where that information is stored. It's stored in this magnificent double helical molecule called the DNA. But the big mystery of research on the origin of life has been, where did the information come from? Our local hero here in the Seattle area in Redmond, Bill Gates, says DNA is like a software program, only much more complex than anything we've created. One of our leading biotech people here in the area, Leroy Hood, says that DNA contains, quote, digital code. Well, what we know from experience is that digital information always arises from an intelligent source, whether we find that in a section of software or whether we find it in an alphabetic form, in a paragraph in a book or hieroglyphic inscription or information embedded in a radio signal. Whenever we find information and trace it back to its ultimate source, we always come to a mind, not a material process. And so the argument of my previous two books was that this discovery of information at the foundation of life in every living cell on Earth is evidence of the activity of a prior designing intelligence in both the origin and history of life on Earth.
You begin the book with a debate that you had where your opponent, a leading materialist who basically showed disrespect to you, he took pride in the fact that he was giving you a migraine headache. He actually did give you a migraine headache. How did that headache lead to the return of the God hypothesis?
Well, it wasn't so much the headache. It was all the great things I got to study in preparation for the debate and in interaction with this leading new atheist. I actually appreciate these guys because they do a great job of framing the key issues. Richard Dawkins, one of the other leading new atheists, says that the universe has exactly the properties we should expect. If there was no purpose, no design, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. In other words, materialism, just matter and energy knocking around. And I use that quote to frame the argument of the book because I ask the question, well, is that true? Is it true that if materialism is true, would we expect there to be evidence of a definite beginning to the material universe before which we couldn't talk about matter and energy, space and time? I don't think so. Matter and energy, space and time are supposed to be eternal and self-existent on a materialistic worldview, but yet that's not what modern cosmology is now showing us. Would we expect a finely tuned universe? Again, it's a very unexpected. A fine tuning implies a fine tuner. Would we expect digital code or a complex information processing system at the foundation of life and even the simplest living cells? Again, all these things are very surprising from this dominant materialistic worldview that we've inherited from the late 19th century, and yet they're precisely what you would expect on the theory of intelligent design, and even more specifically, you would expect precisely this if the designer had been a transcendent agent, a.k.a. God. So I actually love the way these new atheists frame issues. They're very good at deciding what the real issues are at stake. And they've helped, in a way, help me clarify the way I wanted to unfold the argument, albeit in contrast to their point of view.
That's Dr. Steve Meyer. People should definitely, if you're interested in the book at all, you should go to discovery.org/Medved. discovery.org/Medved. And Steve, thank you for all you do to uplift conversation, knowledge, and understanding in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
That was Michael Medved and Stephen Meyer discussing Meyer's new book, The Return of the God Hypothesis. Jump on over to your favorite online bookseller and check it out. For ID the Future, I'm Tom Gilson. Thanks for listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.